Thank you guys for sticking around. These are really hard acts to follow. Oh my gosh. Anyhow, Dr. Longo's research is being presented simultaneously right now by Dr. Yang in another department, and Dr. Amos moved to Illinois and wasn't able to come. This topic became of interest to me when I used to be an ER nurse and working in triage, when people would come in and you do a little history on people and you ask them if they're taking any medications. A lot of my Latin American clients would say, no, I'm not taking any medications, and I'd push a little further and push a little further, and they'd say, oh, you know, I am taking amoxicillin. Oh, okay. How long have you been taking amoxicillin? Oh, about 3 weeks. What are you taking amoxicillin for? Oh, I had an ear infection. Oh, okay, and they'd be checking into the ER for a sore throat or something like that. So I would go back to the ER docs and say, FYI, they're here for this complaint of sore throat, but they've been on amoxicillin for 3 weeks, and they'd say, yeah. And they'd leave with a prescription. So I started thinking, is anybody concerned about this? Because I'm really concerned about this. I had one patient tell me that she was taking amoxicillin for preventative measures so she didn't get sick. So as an ER nurse, I tried to do some education, I tried to do some teaching, and it was met with complete failure. I offended everybody that I tried to teach. I couldn't find a mechanism to do this in an appropriate manner. So when I started my master's work, this is what I worked on. I have no disclosures to report. That's my objectives kind of quickly. So no new news, antibiotic resistance is a global health threat. 20% of newly diagnosed TB is drug resistant. The drugs used to treat malaria are no longer effective in 81 of the 92 countries where they're so needed. Nosocomial infections kill 40,000 Americans in the U.S. yearly. Drug resistance was first noticed just 10 years after antibiotics were first invented. Why do we have it? Over-prescription, self-prescription, patient expectations. As you saw on these previous screens, when people are so impoverished and they do make their way to a doctor, how hard that is to get there to begin with, and they aren't given an antibiotic, they feel cheated. They feel like they've been conned. So they head over to the local pharmacy where a pharmacy tech, they describe their symptoms, and a pharmacy tech will sell them what they have based on how much money they have. So why don't we just make better drugs? They're expensive. They cost a lot of money. The research costs a lot of money. Everything comes back to money. The drugs that used to treat TB were $20. Now they're $2,000 for a dose of those, or not a course. Thank you. A course of those. And the research for super drugs in the antibiotic risk area is low. Cardiovascular, GI, and neuro drugs are where the money is right now. Is it just a problem in Latin America? Absolutely not. It's a problem everywhere. Even here in America, you can buy antibiotics in some of the little Hispanic markets across the United States. In New York, they're blatantly out on the shelves. In Reno, Nevada, where I live, if you speak Spanish, they might sell to you if they trust you. In some of the areas that I read about, they'll sell to you if you speak Spanish. Obviously, Canada, you can buy antibiotics. Europe, different places sell antibiotics over the counter, so it's not just a problem with Latin Americans. However, Latin Americans being the fastest growing population in America and certainly in Nevada, this was a big interest to me. So self-prescription is defined basically by taking antibiotics that weren't prescribed for you or that you had left over or that you bought without a prescription. And that's a picture of a little pharmacy in Latin America where you can see the menu there at the bottom and you can walk in and order blood pressure medications or diabetic medications or antibiotics or whatever you need over the counter. So why do they self-prescribe it? The last two presentations painted a really good picture. Poverty. Poverty is why people self-prescribe. They don't have choices to go to a doctor. They may not even have a doctor in their village. They may not have a doctor close by, and they may not be able to afford it if they did, especially in the rural areas. When the immigration happens to the U.S., a lot of the people don't have insurance or they're underinsured and they can't afford it. So they bring these antibiotics over, or they purchase them here, or they share them within their community setting so that they can afford to treat their conditions. So some different cultural health practices. Lay injectioners are somebody in the village that's kind of been given the task to inject people with medications. The belief is that injectables are stronger and more potent, treat things better than POs, certainly. A lot of the antibiotics that are sold over the counter in Latin America don't have directions that come with them. They don't have durations. They may not have been refrigerated if they were a liquid. They may be outdated. They certainly don't have information about adverse reactions or what to do. Some of the patients that I dealt with in the ER would tell me that their drugs are stronger from where they came from and their doctors are smarter. Again, taking offense to the teaching that I was trying to do, we kind of had a power struggle and it was just completely ineffective. Some of the drugs that I read about in the studies were completely banned by the FDA, still being sold in Latin America, and some were counterfeited where they would empty out capsules and fill the capsules with other materials. So my research questions were, what was the prevalence of self-prescription by Latin Americans in Northern Nevada? What is the difference in self-prescriptive practices from Latin Americans and the rest of the population? And where are these antibiotics obtained? What are they being used for? And what kinds of medications were they recognizing? The conceptual framework that fit really nicely with my study was Dr. Leininger's culture, care, diversity, and universality. And basically, what she talks about is that we need to repattern this kind of behavior, not necessarily accommodate it, not necessarily preserve it, but repattern it within a cultural context that's practical for people living in these conditions and practical for people here in the United States that don't have insurance and are underinsured. So what I did was I created a survey of 11 questions. It was translated into Spanish and translated back into English. So the questions read in English and then they read in a different font in Spanish. The answers were available below the question on the left in English and on the right in Spanish, and they were checkbox answers. There were 11 questions. A couple of them were demographics, and the rest of them talked about do you use antibiotics without a prescription? And if so, where do you get them? And what types of antibiotics do you use? And what kind of conditions do you treat with these antibiotics? So my plan was initially to take the surveys to the local health department and the Orvis School of Nursing in Reno, Nevada, and have, when patients come in and check in, they would be given a clipboard with all the paper that they fill out, and the survey would be in there. When they returned the paperwork, they would then be asked to drop the survey in a collection box. What ended up happening was that the staff got busy, so they set the surveys off the side down the counter, and every week I would come in and beg and beg and beg for them to hand them out with the materials, but they didn't. They set them down the counter. So I needed a large sample size with my power analysis of 614. I got 120. It was much smaller than I had hoped for. 96 of those surveys came from the immunization clinic, and 24 of them came from the Orvis School of Nursing. The population that I got in my sample mirrored pretty much the Nevada demographics and breakdown of the population, with about 25% Hispanic. The main question was, do you use antibiotics, or have you taken an antibiotic without a prescription from a doctor? There was a 4 times higher odds of my Hispanic participants taking antibiotics without a prescription compared to the rest of the population. The 7th question asked, where do you obtain your antibiotics not prescribed by a doctor? And 25% of the Latin American population answered that they buy them in another country, which it was pretty consistent with the literature. That was also statistically significant. The question that asked Do you use antibiotics without a prescription from a doctor? Some participants would answer no, and then go on to answer other questions that led me to believe that they did indeed use antibiotics without a prescription. So I had to readjust those numbers and make a box for people presumed to be self-medicating without antibiotics, in which case the numbers were still significant, and I had a 2 times higher odds of Latin Americans using antibiotics without a prescription. Amoxicillin was not statistically significant, but it was by far the antibiotic that people recognized most and claimed to be using, as opposed to the rest of the antibiotics. Skin conditions I didn't put all of the survey in there in the name of time, but skin conditions was the number one choice people self-medicated for, which really surprised me. It wasn't statistically significant. However, I thought people would choose colds or respiratory infections or sore throats or ear infections, and they chose skin infections overall. One of the interesting findings was that the Hispanic participants seemed to have more internal consistency. In the question that asked if they use antibiotics without a prescription, only one of the Hispanic participants had to be put into the new question with the presumption, as opposed to 14 of the non-Hispanic participants. So they seemed to answer the questions more honestly. Limitations, of course, my survey was small. My sample size was small. The survey design seemed to confuse people with that particular question. The dissemination of the survey didn't go as I had planned. Sitting on the counter wasn't what I wanted to do. The timing of the survey, this happened in July over an 8-week period of time. This is the summertime. People don't tend to be as sick, don't tend to seek medical care. Although it was an immunization clinic, it was the health clinic, a department within the health clinic. So it wasn't accessing the population that I really wanted to get. And the surveys, 10 of the surveys didn't meet criteria, which was the criteria for the survey was that you were an adult 18 years or over, you could read or speak Spanish, read or write in Spanish or English. 10 of them were underage. And I think fear also had a part in it. So implications for Northern Nevada, certainly we need to be aware that this is a problem and that we need to screen patients when we are giving out antibiotics and people are seeking care for things that require antibiotics. We need to be careful with that. We need to do culture care repatterning and restructuring to teach. But then again, there's the issue of economics and how that all works out. I'm not quite sure how to fix the problem. I merely wanted to look at it. At this point, it's possible that over 50% of Latin American clients are self-medicating, and the sample that I took was people that are seeking health care, so people that aren't even seeking health care, that are purely self-treating, weren't measured. And my conclusion is pretty much what I already mentioned. Any questions? Thank you. Does anybody have any questions, comments? Please.
I think your study is very important. And when I was in Texas working, I would come up against that as a practitioner and had to learn to ask people about what things they were using to care for themselves. Because if you're right, if you say, are you taking, what other medications are you taking, they may not even.
Mm-mm. Mm-hmm.
Because I couldn't believe this healthy young woman was injecting herself monthly. And as I asked, she said, well, I have a throat infection, and now I do this to stay well. And she was doing that for 12 months.
Wow. Oh. Well, on the surveys, some people wrote comments at the bottom, and one lady wrote that she was using her horse's antibiotics because they were dosed towards the weight of her horse. She would just dose them towards her weight and give them herself. Another participant wrote that if they knew where to buy them and that they could get them over the counter, they certainly would, but they didn't know that. Go ahead. Go ahead. I haven't looked at the. I haven't looked at that. I want to pursue a PhD, and I want to further this study and get a bigger picture. I looked at one new study that came out where the CDC did an intervention where they were teaching the community via billboards and flyers and Latin American radio, and they found, they went back in and did a smaller study on that sample and found that where they did the interventions, the numbers actually went up. So I don't have a clue how to do it yet, but it certainly needs to be done. Was there a question over here? Go ahead.
We have people who self-medicate a lot with antibiotics, but we also have, our health promoters have a small pharmacy that include antibiotics, and so what we did was we added, because we usually just have the essential medications in that little pharmacy, but we added cough medicine, you know, it's relatively benign.
Right.
And the problem is that people felt so much pressure from their, you know, even though they knew, like, I think physicians, everyone who prescribes medicine, know how to use rational use of antibiotics, but you get so much pressure.
That's right.
Patients, right? And the promoters experience that too. So what we did is we trained them in rational use of antibiotics. I mean, obviously this is a different part of the provider.
It's wonderful.
But you train them in rational use of antibiotics, and they, you give them that other alternative. It's a little bit more expensive for us to carry those cough medicines, but they could still give someone.
Then they feel like they've gotten something. That's right.
And then at the same time, the promoters have workshops with the people in the community because they have a good relationship with them, talking to them about, you know, why, you know, like they're wasting their money. You know what I mean?
Yes. Getting some buy-in from the people. And that's where the teaching needs to go, is in usage, proper usage, and when you treat, I suppose, and when you don't treat, and it's hard. But that's great. That's wonderful to hear. I'm glad to hear that.
Could you please share your results back at the doctors at that hospital, since they were like, yeah, they're self-treating. They actually saw, okay, they really are self-treating, and maybe we need to think about if they've been using amoxicillin, we need to give them something else.
I still work there, per diem. So I, did I introduce myself? I think I didn't. I'm a brand new instructor faculty for the Orville School of Nursing at UNR, but I still work per diem at the hospital, and I did share my research with them. But I didn't really get a lot of feedback, just head nodding, you know.
I want to thank all our speakers, and I want them to come up. Can you come up, and then we can entertain questions for them all, or just ask. Anybody have any questions for our first speaker and her data collection research?
Rita.
Yes.
Oh,
thank you. I forgot. Okay, I'm Rita Laurie. I'm the substitute moderator for our moderator that left, and I have no conflict of interest or any.
Yeah, I have a question.
Yes.
You had talked about the people, if they're more Hispanic or more American. Was that a self-identification, or there were objective indicators to say, okay, they meet this and they're Hispanic, they meet this and they're American?
There was objective questions relating to, a lot of it is actually based on language use, which, you know, has its own limitations to base, you know, cultural identification on language. But it had a series of 24 questions related to acculturation. Half of those were asking them about American acculturation, and the other 12 were regarding their Hispanic enculturation, which is.
Why not?
I just want to congratulate the faculty from Villanueva. I don't think I said it right.
Villanova.
It probably was Villanueva at some point.
Yes, I know. Anyway, and you know, utilizing your students to conduct this research and allowing them to be a part of this presentation, I think is beautiful.
Do you want my dean's email address?
Not only has it been wonderful to work with the nursing students, but the cross discipline collaboration with the financial, the business students, and the engineering students has been very rich. And I think we've all learned a lot from each other.
They've been rewarding for all of us, the students, and well, I think it's been rewarding for them, but it's really rewarding for us as faculty.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm at an institution that don't. They place students with faculty, and it's more of a mission course.
Mm-hmm.
Is yours a 4-credit and they maybe are doing either an elective or an alternative experience for the community, which is where I would like to see our institution go. And I also love the level of interprofessional collaboration. It's crossing the traditional healthcare teams.
I will speak to kind of, I guess, how it works, because I did the credit course. I took research early. I took it as a sophomore, when it's usually taken as a junior. And then that provided me the ability to do an independent research project. And when I did it, I think there were four other students who were doing the same thing with different faculty members. So we were told to go and sort of scout out a faculty member who is doing research in something that we're interested in, and then sort of tag on with them. So that's, and it was a 3-credit course for a semester, but obviously that was last year and it's this year, so I'm still doing it now.
So dovetailing on research versus the community course.
Well, right. The students are doing it as independent study, so it becomes an elective. In this program, This is an elective, so Caitlin kind of designed what that independent study is with Betty.
But they will get an additional 3 credits as part of their health promotion clinical when we return in March. And other students will accompany us. So the nursing students who go on these international trips over spring break as part of their health promotion clinical receive 3 credits. The engineering students are able, they go as volunteers, but they are able often to use the information for their capstone engineering projects. So the engineering faculty work with them, and doesn't always work out that well for them, but for the most part it does. And right now the business students, I don't believe, are getting credit.
And may I call or email
to you? Sure, yeah, we'd be delighted to talk to you.
Yeah,
because I'm from Pennsylvania.
Yes?
I'm sorry, I came in late, I was in another session. I just wondered if you could publish your...
Yes, we hope to.
We have not yet. That's
what about the other speakers? Have you published? Yeah, this is the work that I presented is under review.
Oh,
excellent!
Good.
Yeah,
sounds really excellent.
Yes.
On your program, how do the students pay for their travel?
It's been expensive, you know, for the students. There's a number of methods. The students sometimes have paid their own airfare, and then the grant has paid in-country expenses. We have some money from the Conley-Deluvier funds that will support one trip, a partial payment towards one trip. That's through the College of Nursing. The university has some money through some scholarships, and the students do a lot of fundraising. It's a conglomeration.
That's actually... when I have free time, which I don't know when it's ever going to happen, that's what I would like to focus on, is some funding for students, because I think this is so valuable. And so, you know, somehow make it easier for them, because
the tuition's expensive. The grant paid for the students to come out today.
Yeah, we also, myself and Caitlin and the engineering students, we participated in a social entrepreneurship competition that was on campus last semester, and will be in
applying
this
again.
Coming April.
Yeah.
And that provides monetary support for students to go and do work like this.
But each one of the students registers for a separate independent study course.
In this particular project, yes.
This is from Ms. Padilla. I wanted to ask, you are the person who is the principal investigator for the study?
Yes.
120 people in the sample that you actually went out there and got those surveys for is not something to be perceived as. I wouldn't minimize it.
Thank you.
And you may not have had the power for the analysis that you originally planned, but I think you have a very important study, and you
have
a lot of very good descriptive information. You have a lot of good insights because of the way your question really is very grounded in the practice, and I think you have a dynamite article.
Well, thank you very much.
There you go.